Good morning, and we greet y'all in Christ's name this morning. I can say it was good to be here already. Things that were shared. Also want to welcome our visitors here as well. Feel free to worship God with us. Going through a Bible reading plan and going through the book of Genesis recently, some things that stood out to me, particularly in the life of Joseph and Jacob, or Jacob and Joseph, if you will. A lot of times we think of their life sort of big picture, but when we get down into it and, you know, sometimes we have questions, well, how did those things actually play out? What was some of the day-to-day conversations that were had when you see what they did in certain situations? And so I thought it would center sort of around Joseph first, and then touching back on Jacob a little bit, but they're sort of intertwined, the stories, obviously. If we go to Genesis 41, verse 42, we have Joseph just recently got a huge promotion. And in verse 42, it says, actually, let me read verse 41 as well. It says, "And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, See, I have set thee over all the land of Egypt. And Pharaoh took off his ring from his hand and put it on Joseph's hand, arrayed him in vestures of fine linen, and put a gold chain about his neck." So he gave him a change of garments. And I'd like to look a little bit about that. And we think, what is it with Joseph and his garments, if you will? Because after all, this is a promotion, right? Well, when we back up a little bit, this happened just after Pharaoh had a weird dream, if you will. And he didn't know, he was puzzled as to what this dream meant. I know I've had weird dreams in the past and wonder, well, what's up with that? You know what? In fact, I had a dream last night, actually. But I don't feel motivated to try to figure out what it means either. You know, I keep thinking that if God really wants me to know what it means, he will definitely let me know, right? I think most times in the Bible when God spoke to his people with visions and dreams, it was clear to them what it meant. Jacob had a vision, and various incidents in the Bible where people had dreams. And I think we all have them at times. But, you know, there have been times that I've puzzled over something, you know, trying to figure something out. And that night I had a dream and everything just became clear in my dream exactly how this is going to play out. Sometimes we get things figured out that way. Then other times things become clear and the next day you think over it and everything is just foggy again. But anyway, Pharaoh had a dream and he was puzzled over that. But Joseph came on the scene, and through the Spirit of God, and there's different times that the Bible says that God was with Joseph, but Joseph, through the Spirit of God, was able to interpret that dream. And here is where Joseph got his promotion. But as we look at Joseph getting a change of garment, and we think, you know, what is Joseph thinking at this point? Another change of garment. So let's back up a little bit and lay a little bit of groundwork to get a little bit of background about Joseph. If we go to Genesis chapter 37 in verse 3, it says, "Now Israel..." And this is referring to Jacob. It says, "Israel loved Joseph more than all his children, because he was the son of his old age, and he made him a coat of many colors." And when his brethren saw that their father loved him more than all his brethren, they hated him and could not speak peaceably unto him. Jacob made Joseph a coat of many colors. Now, in a lot of Bible story pictures, we look at this coat, rainbow colors, many different colors, if you will. I hate to disappoint you, and I'm not saying that that's the way it was, but in the Hebrew, if you look at this in the Hebrew context, it doesn't necessarily mean a coat of many different colors. It actually means a full-bodied coat, a coat that is full sleeve, a coat that goes all the way down to the ankles, if you will, or even heels, perhaps. And we wonder, well, what's up with that? This is a coat that could be Amish and Mennonite approved, if you will. And so it was a full-bodied coat. In our day and age, maybe it was considered a name-brand coat, maybe because of the material that was used, right? And so Joseph is wearing this coat of many colors. You know, sometimes we have people, we only wear the name brand stuff, right? Look at what I'm wearing. And I don't know if this was in that situation for Joseph or not. It says that Jacob actually made it. I don't know if Jacob was a seamstress or not. But, when Esau and Jacob was born, Esau was a mighty hunter of the land, if you will. Jacob sort of hung around the house and helped Rebecca. And maybe being a seamstress was one of those things that he learned. I don't know, but he also, Jacob was a shepherd as well. But it says that Jacob made him a coat of many colors. Okay, so back to Joseph here. We see here that Jacob favored Joseph. When you've got a family of children, 12 children, right? And you favor one above the other. That's a recipe for disaster, right? Something as parents today, who would do that? Who would favor one child above another? But I think to do that, we have to back up a little bit more. We see here that Jacob also had two wives. And having more than one wife is also a recipe for disaster, right? And if you favor one wife above another, that's another recipe for disaster. In fact, you could put that in all caps lock. I mean, that's a real recipe for disaster, if you will. But as we look at that, and maybe to Jacob's credit, he wasn't necessarily after two wives either. He wanted one wife. He wanted Rachel. But he had this kind of father-in-law that he wasn't going to play it the way that Jacob thought. And so basically, if you want to end up with Rachel, you're going to have to get through Leah to get to Rachel. And so basically, the way that Laban worked it is, you can marry Rachel, but you're also going to have to marry Leah as well. So Rachel was his first love, if you will. So in some respects, can we really blame Jacob? After all, Rachel is the one who he was after. It seems like marrying was a little more complicated back then than it is today, right? Or is it? I'm not sure. How would you boys like if your parents would decide which girl that you will get married to? Would you be willing to leave that up to your parents? Or you girls, your parents would decide which boy? How would that go over? So in one sense, marrying was very simple back then. You know, the parents would sort of decide the things. They would decide the price of everything, the bride price, and this is what we go with. So maybe it is a little more complicated these days. I'm not sure. I'll let you decide on that. However, so on account of that, Jacob showed favor to Joseph. And so back to this coat of many colors. As we look at this account and we look at what happened with Joseph, every time he wore this coat, I believe it was another reminder to his brothers of Joseph's special position that he held with his dad. It was another reminder to the brothers' position that they did not have, even the oldest, which was Reuben, I believe. But Joseph was the oldest of his first love, Rachel, if you will. And so Joseph was the favored one. And so every time they saw him with that coat, it was another reminder. Here was the favored son. I remember in school, there was this thing of, you know, a person that was called the teacher's pet, if you will. And that person was sort of bullied, if you will, because, you know, it was sort of looked at, that person received special favors from the teacher. I think that was largely a myth. And I think it was just something that, you know, some of us maybe propagated that thought or that idea that this person received a special favor. And so that person was sort of bullied around, if you will, sort of made fun of. And maybe that's the way it was with Joseph and his brothers in that way as well. So you could make the argument, I think, that this coat played a role into what happened with Joseph. Ended up, you know, getting sold off and ended up in Egypt. I don't know what Jacob did with that coat after the brothers deceived Jacob and brought this coat back to him and made him think that he was eaten by some wild animal. I don't know if Joseph kept that coat. Maybe it was a reminder to him of his son. But that coat did more than one thing, if you will, because I think you could say that coat perhaps played a role in what happened with him. But, you know, God was with Joseph. Joseph ends up going down to Egypt. And what happened? God was with him. He started to work himself up in the ranks. You know, you end up down there as a slave, but Joseph, you know, and God being with him, Potiphar made him over his own household and virtually all of his household. In fact, he basically gave him the keys to his house because God was with Joseph. You know, as long as we keep Jesus front and center of our life, things will go well for us, right? And Joseph could be thinking the same thing. You know, who deserved the treatment that he got from his brothers? And now he ends up in Egypt, a strange place, considered enemies of God's people. But God was with him and he worked himself up. But, you know, the devil, I believe, was conniving. I think the devil was thinking, we're going to have to find a way how to bring down Joseph. And so they use Potiphar's wife, and she tries to seduce him. And one day she made her move. And what did Joseph do? He tries to get away, and the easiest way to get away was to slip out of his garments. And what did she have? She had Joseph's garment. And once again, this garment played a role in Joseph ending up in jail. Because now she's got the garment, his garment. This is evidence. This is firsthand evidence. All that was needed to put Joseph in jail. So he is right back down to earth, if you will. Did he despair? I don't know if he despaired or not. It doesn't really say. But again, God was with him, And what happens in jail? He worked himself up in the ranks. He was soon assisting, you know, with other inmates. And he worked himself up, even though he was in jail. You know, even inmates nowadays have certain privileges. And I think Joseph had some of those privileges. But, and that happened that way for several years. And then finally, through God's timing, Pharaoh had his dream. And Joseph, through God, interpreted that dream, and Joseph gets his promotion. And part of this promotion is another change of garments. And, you know, what was Joseph thinking at that time? Is he thinking, well, as good as this might seem, is this going to last? What does God have for me in this? But I think this is somewhat different. This is a garment from a king. This is from Pharaoh himself. And I have to think of the prodigal son. What did the father do to the prodigal son? He also received a change of garment, right? And you could say it was also the love of a father, Jacob, that put the first robe on him. But you could say perhaps that love was misplaced, if you will. But the question is, what kind of garments are we wearing? Have we received our change of garments? Have we returned to our father? Because that is precisely what he wants to do for each one of us, is a change of garments. In Isaiah chapter 64, verse 6, it says, "For all of us have become like one who is unclean. All of our righteous deeds are like a filthy garment. And all of us wither like a leaf, and our iniquities like the wind takes us away." So again, we have become like one who is unclean. Our righteous deeds are like a filthy garment. And then in Isaiah 61:10, it says, "I will rejoice greatly in the Lord. My soul will exalt in my God, for he hath clothed me with garments of salvation. He has wrapped me with a robe of righteousness, as a bridegroom decks himself with a garland, and as a bride adorns herself with jewels." And so again, that's what God wants for each one of you. Each one of you can be wearing that garment, that robe of righteousness and garments of salvation. Okay, in Zechariah 3, verse 4, it says, "He spoke and said to those who were standing before him, saying, remove the filthy garments from him. And again he said to him, see, I have taken your iniquity away from you, and I will clothe you with festal robes." And so I like that picture there, having a change of garments. And then if we go to Genesis chapter 50, verse 20, did Joseph, this promotion, did he allow this to go to his head? In chapter 50, verse 20, or in 19, it says, "And Joseph said unto them, fear not, for I am in the place of God. But as for you, ye thought evil against me, but God meant it unto good to bring it to pass, as it is this day, to save much people alive." And then in 21, he says, "Now therefore fear not, I will nourish you and your little ones." And it says, "And he comforted them and spake kindly unto them." This was happened when Joseph's brother, after Jacob had died and passed on, his brothers thought, oh no, what have we got ourselves into? Because now, perhaps Jacob, Joseph was, you know, they were afraid that Joseph was thinking, okay, now that Jacob is gone, now I can finally repay my brothers' revenge for what they did to me. But this was Joseph saying. It says, "You thought evil against me, but God meant it unto good to bring it to pass." And here, Joseph is looking at the big picture. Joseph's brothers, up to this point, you know, they were looking at what was in front of them. But Joseph was thinking big picture. I love how that God had touched Joseph's heart and given him a big picture mentality. Rather than focusing on the wrongs done to him and the hurt that came with those wrongs, Joseph recognized God's hand in all the events associated with those, quote, bad things. He knew that God orchestrated those events and through his brothers' evil motives and actions to bring about a preservation of their lives as a remnant in the earth. Now it says, having a big picture mentality frees us to walk in unforgiveness even towards those who treat us unforgivably. We know that God has a purpose and he wastes nothing in our lives. If we keep our eyes on that truth, forgiveness becomes second nature, which reflects God's heart toward us. And so again, as long as we focus on big picture, that is the key to be able to forgive. That is the key to when people hurt us, to be able to work through that the way Joseph did. Who else had a better excuse to turn bitter and all those things? It was Joseph. But he kept the big picture in mind. If we don't see the big picture, we only see what's in front of us. God always sees the big picture, and that's what he was seeing here. Okay, let's focus on Jacob a little bit here now. If we go back to Genesis 28, in verse 10, we have here Jacob's dream, and Jacob went out from Beersheba and went towards Haran, and he lighted upon a certain place and tarried there all night because the sun was set. And he took of the stones of that place and put them for his pillow and lay down in that place to sleep. Again, here Jacob had a dream, and he dreamed, and behold, a ladder set up on the earth, and the top of it reached to heaven. And behold, the angels of God ascending and descending on it. And behold, the Lord stood above it and said, I am the Lord God of Abraham, thy father, and the God of Isaac. The land whereon thou liest, to thee I will give it, and to thy seed. And thy seed shall be as the dust of the earth, and thou shalt spread abroad to the east, or to the west, to the east, and to the north, and to the south. And thee and in thy seed shall all the families of the earth be blessed. And behold, I am with thee, and I will keep thee in all places whither thou goest, and I will bring thee again into this land, for I will not leave thee until I have done that which I have spoken to thee of. And Jacob awaked out of his sleep, and he said, surely the Lord is in this place, and knew it not. And he was afraid and said, how dreadful is this place! This is none other but the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven. And so Jacob was on his way to flee from Esau. And basically, in this dream, God told Jacob that all this land, I'm going to give it to you. This land will be yours. Okay? And now think this through a little bit. what all transpired, okay, Jacob went to Laban. He got married. He amassed lots of animals, lots of wealth. And so now Jacob comes back to the land of Canaan, right? And so think about it. This land was promised to Jacob. This is his land, right? And so he is now living out what God had promised to him. He said, the land that you lay on, I will give it to you. Okay? So now, think fast forward now. They are living in this land that God had promised to them. Joseph is gone. He is heartbroken over that. His favorite son is gone. And all of a sudden, you have this famine. And Joseph's brothers go down to Egypt, and chaos is starting to break out again. And as much as Jacob has went through already in his life, he is probably used to receiving bad news, and he's received a lot of it, right? And so now we have in Genesis 45, we have Joseph's brother, and Joseph is revealing himself to the brothers in Genesis 45, in verse 4 through 14. I don't know that I have time to read all of that, but basically, Joseph is telling his brothers to tell Jacob to come down to Egypt, okay? And that there is still 5 more years of famine. Come down and do not tarry. And in 45, in verse 26, we see Jacob. In 26, it says, and told him, saying, Joseph is yet alive, and he is the governor over all the land of Egypt. And Jacob's heart fainted, for he believed them not. The English Standard Version says his heart was numb. How did Jacob feel in this situation? I mean, he'd had to be over the top excited, right? And so now think about it. He is excited, right? He faced a lot of hurdles in life, a lot of life-changing events. You know, his intended marriage to Rachel, you know, how all that played out. He lost her through childbirth. He was on the receiving end of a lot of things, you will. And now, all of a sudden, he received this news of Joseph. What is Jacob expected to do at this point? Of course, you're going to take a trip down to Egypt, right? But what about moving down there? I mean, sure, you would take the, you know, you'd take the early bus, train, or whatever to go down to Egypt to see your son, right? This is a good thing. But why are we moving down there when God promised this land is my land? He promised it to me. I mean, don't you see the contradiction, the struggle that Jacob would be having here? You know, sitting down with his sons, what are we going to do? We can't just up and leave. This is our land. It's promised to us. God told us that he's going to give it to us. We can't do that, this real estate that I'm living on. Okay, and so it makes sense. So Joseph said, okay, so there's 5 more years of famine. And so we'll go down there. We'll just make it temporarily, right? We'll go down to Egypt. Once this famine is over, we'll go back. We'll get a temporary visa. And after this famine, we will move right back. Was that part of Jacob's mindset? You know, and he probably thought, you know, you think these Canaanites are going to honor any property line deeds, if you will? You know, that may have been written up. We cannot let this land go back to these heathens. I tell you what, I will consult God in the matter and see what he says. Do we read that? Jacob, first of all, said, okay, let's consult God and see what he says about the matter. Jacob, it appears he was so elated about his oldest son. Who can blame him? He's ready just to pack up and go down there. We don't even read that he considered God first. However, in Genesis 46, verse 1 through 7, and now this is after they had packed up and they're going to move to Egypt. His son is down there. In verse 46, and Israel took his journey with all that he had. So he says he had everything and came to Beersheba and offered sacrifices unto the God of his father Isaac. And so here we have Jacob. And I don't know what he's thinking, Israel, at this point. So they packed up everything, and on the way, going through Beersheba, and I don't know what he's thinking, but perhaps, you know, his father Isaac and his grandfather Abraham had lived there at one point at Beersheba. And so maybe this was sort of as a final farewell Maybe there was some nostalgia going on there. And maybe he thought, well, we're going to Egypt. I'll probably die down there. And so he would offer a sacrifice to God at this place. And I love this picture, how God comes in here and he reassures Jacob. It says, "And God spake unto Israel in the visions of the night, another dream, and said, Jacob, Jacob. And he said, Here am I. And he said, I am God, the God of thy father. Fear not to go down to Egypt, for there I will make of thee a great nation. And I will go down with thee unto Egypt, and I will surely bring thee up again. And Joseph shall put his hand upon thine eyes." I love that picture. God did not stand back and say, you know, Jacob, why did you not consult me first? You know, here you packed up all your bags. You're basically on your way down there, and then you finally offer a sacrifice. We don't read that. But here, God is moving into this picture here, and he is reassuring Jacob to go on down, that he's going to be with him. I love this picture of a father going to his son, because I think in this case, Joseph represents something greater than just a son of Jacob. But Joseph is a type of Jesus. And so we have people going to Jesus for sustenance, in this case Joseph, for survival and for friendship. And that involved packing up everything. It wasn't just a temporary move. Jacob packed up everything. It's almost like he sold his place and everything to go down to Egypt. And so what kind of man was Jacob at this point? And so when five of the brothers meet with Pharaoh, you know, things pretty much go according to plan. And he agrees to let them live in Goshen. And so I think Jacob went through some changes in his life personally as well, because when Jacob goes in before Pharaoh, he blesses him. And they have some chit-chat back and forth. But we see humility coming out of Jacob. You remember the Jacob that used to manipulate things to get what he wanted, manipulate things from his father-in-law, using some deceit. He had the scarcity mentality that drove him to half-truths, self-protection. In Genesis 47, verse 9, "And Jacob said unto Pharaoh, The days of the years of my pilgrimage are 130 years. Few and evil have been the days of the years of my life been, and have not attained unto the days of the years of the life of my fathers, and in the days of their pilgrimage. And Jacob blessed Pharaoh and went out from Pharaoh." I love this picture here, how that Jacob in his older years, you know, he went, even though he was living in the land of Canaan, there's a lot of hardships and, you know, the things that happened with Joseph. You know, even though he was living in the land that God had promised to him, he was living out his, quote, dreams, if you will. But it was nothing to what Jacob is experiencing at the end of his life, being reunited with Joseph. And so what happened then? You know, do we read Jacob, you know, with his sons? They settled into the Goshen area. It doesn't appear like it was a temporary move, right? You know, after this famine is over, Joseph actually used the argument of the famine as a way of convincing Jacob to come down. He said, there's five more years of this famine. He wants to keep making this trip all the time. This famine is going to live for five more years. So Jacob sort of had inside information. I don't know how many of the other people knew that, but Joseph sort of used that to persuade Jacob to make this move. And so they made the move. And what happened? Their stakes went down deep in Egypt. What happens when you get comfortable in Egypt? And maybe at the end of the famine, you know, maybe they were like, this land God had promised to us, why do we stay in Egypt? But they were settled in. Goshen was one of the most productive areas in Egypt. They had all their families, their livestock, and everything. These Egyptians are our friends, right? They helped us. They gave us this land. They basically handed us a silver platter. We can't just up and leave. We made friends and we have connections down here. Right? We're having a good time. Our families and everybody, and to now disrupt all that and to move back, that looked pretty maybe like a task for them. But you know, that is usually what happens when we sit down and we make friends and compromise with the enemy, right? We get comfortable. We get comfortable in Egypt. And it's a reminder to us to never get too comfortable here. We sing the song, "This world is not my home." And so everything that we see out there, you know, it's cold outside. We go outside. If we don't, you know, we enjoy being inside where it's warm, right? We don't so much care for the cold. So everything that we see about us reminds us that this is not eternity, the way we have things here. So this world is not my home. The pleasures of Egypt are sweet, but for a season. But the promised land lies well beyond its borders. And so as we think of this scene and we think of all this covenant stuff that God had made with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and seeing they left all of that behind and are now settled down in Egypt, what is God thinking? What is he thinking? You know, how am I ever going to get them out of this mess? You know, here I helped them. They went to Egypt. You know, and now they're settled down there. How am I ever going to get them out? You know, by the way, if you go to Genesis chapter 15, verse 13, is God actually promised to Abraham that Israel was going to be afflicted for 400 years? God told Abraham this was going to happen. But I think God told Abraham as a matter of record, you know, that this was going to happen. As a matter of record. Again, we have to think big picture. The next time you think life is unfair, think big picture. The next time you feel taken advantage of, think of the big picture. The big picture allows you to somewhat see life the way that God sees life. That's how God operates, is big picture. If we, in Romans chapter 12, verse 2, how do we get this big picture mentality? Is it just something that we can sort of cook up on our own? A familiar passage, it says, "And be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, that ye may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God." So if we interpret the things that life brings at us, and when we interpret that through a transformed mind, that always brings us to the bigger picture. There's a greater cause, the greater good of what God is trying to bring to us. And many times we look at this and we think, you know, couldn't God have just bypassed the whole 400 years of bondage? Couldn't he bypass all of that? The 40 years of wandering in the wilderness before getting to the promised land? Couldn't he have not worked it out so that Israel would never have to leave Canaan in the first place? God could have done all of that. But if he had, we never would have the picture of God's redemption of his people out of bondage. We would never have the picture of God always preserving a remnant of his people. One of the greatest stories in the Bible, in the Old Testament, all of the Old Testament, one of the greatest stories that ever happened was this God's people, his remnant, coming out of Egypt. Because so much of it was all with the idea of someday under this new covenant of people coming out of Egypt, coming to God, coming to that holy mountain, we would never have learned to trust God's timing because we would have never had to. So today, Lord, today, don't let me question your sovereign timeline. So the timeline of God, let's not question that. Whether it's the 13 years of Joseph's slavery, or the 7 years of famine, or the 400 years of Israel's bondage, let us trust God. So whether it's 3 months of lockdown, or a year of pandemic, or a four-year presidential term, let us trust you. God's timing is perfect. His plan is magnificent, and his sovereignty is undisputed. So let's wait on God's timing. Let's look at the big picture. Okay, let's kneel for a word of prayer.